Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I'm Sarah Polinchek, and I'm here with my co-host,
John Summers Flanagan. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, John. So today's episode, When Teens Talk Back.
Right. I mean, there's really not much to say about teens talking back because rarely they don't do it very often, right?
Right. What are we even doing here?
Well, I don't know. We're actually, the idea for the show comes from a long time ago, a guy named Rick McLeod, who is a local counselor in Missoula, Montana, used to teach this class at Families First in Missoula, and it was a great class, and he had some fabulous ideas. And so I want to thank Rick for contributing some ideas to us.
Well, and I'm going to confess, I know a little bit about you, John, and I know that teens are one of your specialties, and I happen to have one, and I have another one that is about to be a teen in a few months, so I'm excited to talk to you. I have a few questions.
Okay, so this is sort of like your consultation time?
Wait. Hypothetically, let's say I were to have a teen. Wait, right?
Yeah, right. You have a cousin.
Yes. So, hypothetically, I have a teenager. I'm hoping you have some help for me today.
I'm ready to help. Okay. What kinds of things are going on?
Well, what about this talking back thing?
Well, it is natural for teens to talk back. Have yours talked back? Ever?
Well, this friend tells me.
That's what I meant to say.
That her teens do talk back quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's off-putting, to say the least.
Okay. Well, you be the teen.
Okay.
And I'll be the parent.
Okay.
And we'll just have a little role play. You ready?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So ask me about my day.
So how was your day, Sarah?
Oh, geez. You're going to start asking questions again.
Oh. You know, I noticed that was a little disrespectful. And I want to just tell you, Sarah, that I brought you into this world. I can take you out. That's one of the things that parents shouldn't say.
That's kind of funny, yeah.
It is. It's a classic. Another one that parents shouldn't say is, hey, I've been reading a lot, Sarah, and one thing I read is that your brain's not even completely developed. And
so whatever. My brain's better than your brain.
Well, you know what? We're going to stop the role play.
Okay.
Because you're right. In a lot of ways, the teen brain is better than our adult parent brain. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. One of the things I have strong feelings about is all the stuff that's being written about the teen brain. I know you've been wanting to ask me about that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the teen brain.
I feel like it's just another way that our culture is disrespecting teenagers. Mm-hmm. Because there's this sort of, they're just teenagers and you can't really expect much of them because, I mean, their brains aren't even completely wired up and that's what the neuroscience says and that's what the neuroscientists say. And so all that does, in my mind, is just continue to lower the expectations of what we think teenagers should act like. And if I was a teenager, and I don't know if it's true, I haven't asked a lot of teens, I've asked a few, but if I was a teenager, I would think that's really disrespectful.
Well, and something we know about human behavior is that we live up to the expectations that the people around us put on us, right?
Right, or right? Down to them.
Exactly. So if people are referring to us as, oh, you're just kind of one of those moody, irritable, grumpy, you don't make good decisions kind of people, then guess what? And we talked about this in previous episodes. It's character feedback. It's the notion that we live up to the ideas that people are putting on us, the descriptions that they put on us.
Right. And if I'm thinking and acting like you have a undeveloped brain,
right?
Yeah, then my expectations for you are not very high. And one thing I want to say is that although there is some neuroscience and that the teen brain continues to develop, the adult brain continues to develop. We know that adult neurogenesis, the production of new neurons in the adult brain, also happens. And yes, there's more happening in the teen brain. And yes, the prefrontal cortex is not as well developed in the teen brain as it is in the adult brain. If we overemphasize that and we're thinking that, all we're doing is lowering our expectations to a dangerous level.
And it kind of reminds me of something else we've talked about in previous episodes, which is that we want to make sure we're putting the attention on the good parts. There's so many amazing, wonderful, funny things about teenagers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find them fascinating, really. This is a little aside, but if someone would let me just sit in the halls of the high school here in Missoula and just observe, that would be a fun way to spend my day.
Right. Right. And a lot of times what they're doing is they are sort of gaining experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so you'd be watching all the ways that they're interacting with each other that is fascinating. And the truth is their brains are in a lot of ways better than ours. I mean, if you look at sort of average mental ability, sort of just brain power that allows you to make calculations and solve puzzles.
And think quickly.
And think quickly. Teenage brains are probably a little better than adult brains.
Now that you say that, I don't notice my teenager struggling to find his words like I do. So
there you go.
I'm going to go back to something cheesy I've said before, which is that we want to make sure we're watering the flowers and not watering the weeds, right? Mm-hmm. So we've said that about young kids, and I'm thinking it's the same thing with teenagers. We want to make sure we're putting a focus on all their good things and not be overemphasizing these, you know, behaviors that are there.
Right. So one thing you talked about before we started the show is how teenagers are really striving for independence. And I know you have had some experiences with your teenagers, even though, or maybe your friend has had experiences with her teenagers. So tell me a little bit about that. What's going on developmentally for teenagers?
Well, they're marching towards independence, right? Mm-hmm. And we could say, really, that from the time, you know, kids are born, that they're marching towards independence. But when they're teenagers, there are a lot of the behaviors they're doing that are getting them towards that independence seem a little more frightening. They seem a little more out of our control. And they're more real. You know, I'm struck almost daily that I really only have 3.5 years left of my son living at home. And,
wow.
And that really hits me. And they're so many things that they do that are a pulling away from us. And it's hard as parents, I think, not to take those things personally. But developmentally, it's what they're supposed to do.
Right. They are doing what we call independent striving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Striving for individuation,
mm-hmm.
to be a separate person
mm-hmm.
from you.
Yeah.
The mom or the dad or the caregiver.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not that fun. You know, when kids were 3 and 4 and they needed their sandwiches cut in a certain way, I mean, that was striving towards independence,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of cute.
Right.
And now some of these things, gosh, I'm choosing to have a Coke for breakfast. I mean, that's not that cute, you know, especially for me.
Right.
Yeah. So there's just lots of those things that they do that are just a little bit harder for us as parents to embrace.
And so one thing I'd say that it's important for us to manage in terms of our expectations also is teenagers are not going to be naturally polite and smooth and socially poised in the way that they try to get independence. There will be bumps in the
mm-hmm.
road, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try to express their needs for independence in ways that are rude and offensive and that, believe it or not, Sarah, push your buttons.
Mm. I have buttons, I found.
Did your has your teenager found them?
My teenager's really good at that, actually.
Yeah.
It's impressive. So, John, do we have some guidelines about how we navigate all of this?
Yeah. And the first guideline, I think, is for us or you out there listening to figure out what are your really deep family values. What are the priorities in terms of how you want your child to behave? And how much back talk, right? How much disrespect, because some will come at you. How much is acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you set limits in the right places for your family? And every family is a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's going to come out one way or another, that striving for independence. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be smooth.
No, and we need to have a little bit of tolerance for some of those imperfections because, gosh, if we're hammering them on everything, that's not going to set us up to be in a good place with our relationship, right?
Yeah.
So I'll talk about what we do little bit.
Great.
So unfortunately for my family, I'm a relationship educator. So I say unfortunately because I do think I can err on the side of being a little obnoxious about that sometimes. But contempt. So one thing we know is that contempt is one of the most toxic behaviors in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't have any tolerance for those contemptuous behaviors. And what's included in contempt is coming and speaking from a place of superiority. So when anyone talks like name-calling or saying things like, you're so stupid, or you know those looks where it's just, oh, God.
Yeah.
And actually, I can tolerate the looks a little bit because those don't feel quite as aggressive, but no name-calling, absolutely
mm-hmm.
none, unless it's, hey, honey, or, you're awesome, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
So you might in your family, what I'm hearing is you might accept a sort of a muttering or a mumbling of like, oh, but your teenager is complying,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
You might accept an eye roll
mm-hmm.
or a sigh, but you're not going to accept in your family it's unacceptable to call you or your husband or the other preteen
right.
a disrespectful name.
Yeah. No, absolutely no name calling. And we've had to nip that in the bud right away because I can see really easily how that could have gone big.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's sort of step one is you figure out your values and what's acceptable in your home. And what you're saying is because you're a relationship educator,
mm-hmm.
you're really focused in on contempt being unacceptable
mm-hmm.
in your home.
Very clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in addition to what's unacceptable, I think you also, another step in this process, is need to think in advance about what is acceptable. What's a desirable way for your teenager
yeah.
to express himself or herself.
Yeah, and in the spirit of practice, because they don't know. I mean, this stuff is really hard. We talked in one of our previous episodes about relationships and how conflict management is a tough thing to do with adults. So gosh, mm-hmm. we need to give our teenagers a lot of chances. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I do is I institute the do-over. You know, if there is a really disrespectful, contemptuous, you know, statement that's made or interaction that's made, then we take a break, walk away for 20 minutes because we know 20 minutes is the minimum amount of time that most people need to pull themselves back together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back and they can practice two or three different ways to do it over.
Nice.
So, yeah. And it's not always pretty. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't always go well, I'm going to confess.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time we can use humor and they'll act it out and then they can have their privileges back. But there aren't any privileges until they can do the do-over at least.
Nice.
Some, yeah.
And so what I'm hearing is that you guys are pretty clear about that value of contempt and disgust.
Mm-hmm.
That's not tolerated. When that happens, you kind of implement a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do it over in a respectful way, they might have a chance of getting what they want or
mm-hmm.
getting things their way.
Mm-hmm.
But if they continue to be disrespectful and contemptuous, the answer is always no.
It is always no.
Yeah.
Yes. The other thing I'll add to that is that they need a cooling down period. And I think that's such an important skill to give kids is to help them learn some coping skills,
mm-hmm.
to go just take a break, be by themselves, do some deep breathing, do some thinking, whatever it is that they need to do. The other rule, though, that I recommend is that they don't calm down using technology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a good way to get yourself re-regulated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're really expecting them and trying to model and teach them do self-soothing and self-calming,
mm-hmm.
but do it without screens or technology.
Mm-hmm.
Does that include music? Can they listen to music?
I think they can listen to music,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not totally inflexible. So I think music's okay. And I think, too, that sometimes, depending on the offense, every once in a while to maybe, you know, a little bit of maybe you can watch a little TV or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to seem too rigid here.
Right. Right. But I like the idea. I mean,
yeah.
and if we think about parenting as, you know, you're a role model,
mm-hmm.
and that's really a big part of what parenting is.
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to need to communicate in ways that are not contemptuous also.
Right.
You're going to have to do the do-over in a very respectful way. Oh, you know, I see mm-hmm. that you weren't able to communicate to your brother in a way that's respectful. We're going to try to do that over again in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that you also are modeling, how do you calm down without the aid of a screen?
I think walking the dog is one of the best things, right? You get pet interaction, you get exercise, boom.
Yeah.
You're all better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a great idea. Okay. Now, another part of the process or the steps of dealing with when teens talk back, and we're really emphasizing a lot here that you need to think through this in advance. You know, you need to know your values of what you will not accept, of what you do accept or expect.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other issue is you need to have consequences because sometimes your kids step over the line. Your
mm-hmm.
teens do things that are way out there.
Mm-hmm.
They might call you an effing something.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
They might, yeah.
And that might be so far over the line that it's not a do-over.
Right.
You need to have a consequence. Now, here's my advice on the consequences.
Okay.
Make them small. Make them things that you have control over. And the whole point is to help them see that this is a violation of the family rule. And when the family rules are violated, you have a consequence. It's sort of like a signal that lets people know Mm-hmm. But those teenagers know, not acceptable. You're not getting away with that. But it has to be something in your control. So I would say things like, and you tell me what you think about this.
Okay.
Maybe 12 hours without a phone.
I like, backing up a little, I like what you said to make it small. And I think depending on the offense, that 12 hours might be appropriate. Yeah. I also think in the hypothetical household we've been referring to, that 1 hour can really make a big impact, depending on, again, what the offense is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that we want to make sure we're not taking away some of the positive pieces of our teenager's life, which is their socialization is such a huge thing, and to completely take away a whole weekend of no friends at all might be too much for most kids. I mean, we want them to have those things in their lives that are positive and good.
Yeah.
And socializing is positive and good for teenagers, for all of us.
And I would add to that, we don't want to shock or surprise our kids in a negative way with a consequence that seems over the top and that was not anything that was sort of on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if they have a dance coming up and all of a sudden saying, you're not going to the dance, it's like, wait a minute, that wasn't on the table for negotiation, and it seems like it's too big of a thing. Now, there might be, I mean, if it was a big illegal behavior,
that
the trust was really ruptured or violated, then that might be a reasonable thing to have as a consequence. But I would say that would be a big one. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're thinking of consequences, don't take away the really positive things that your child has in his or her life.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take away sports. Don't take away band, you know?
Exactly.
You might have to postpone your consequence because if you're going to take the phone away and your kid's going to go on a school band trip, you might say, when you get back, I've got your phone for 6 hours. And you're doing 6 hours of phone-free time. But I want you to have your phone on the band trip because you need to text me.
Right. You arrived. The other big thing, too, is that, gosh, we've talked about this before, but we do not have to implement consequences in the moment.
Right.
I think it's always such a good idea to say, you know what, that was a big deal. I'm really feeling some big feelings here, and I'm going to take a step back and go think about this, and you and I will reconvene in about an hour and talk about what we're going to do. I think in addition to not just reacting and overreacting, it also models that we have self-control and that we're being thoughtful. We're not just reacting in these really big emotional ways that are maybe going to be regretful down the road.
Yeah. And generally speaking, the conversations go so much better after that hour delay.
A little time.
Or 20
Not
minutes,
much
like
has to happen in the moment, especially at this age.
Right.
You know, with three-year-olds, if they're about to run in the street, you have to really react. Right now, you usually have some time.
Even though sometimes your teenager will act like it's a crisis, you probably have time to deal with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So another thing to keep in mind, consequences are important to have in your mind ahead of time and to let your teenager know that these are things that could happen if there's disrespect or contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to keep in mind is that lecturing tends to not be all that helpful.
Oh. You don't remember enjoying a good 15-minute lecture when you were a teenager?
Well, the thing is, lectures are very tempting for parents, right?
They're so sad. There's something so satisfying about just getting all of our intelligent We're showing them what we know, right?
Yeah. I like to say is that if, as a parent, you want to do a lecture, just put it on the calendar and schedule it, sort of like a sermon. I mean, it's fine, and sometimes kids can get something from the lecture, but usually in the moment of some kind of a conflict, the lecture is not an effective learning tool or teaching tool.
Right.
And so parents just need to realize if you're lecturing, you're doing it for yourself.
Right.
Probably more than for the teenager.
Right. So just few words, letting them know that is not okay. Nope, we will talk about this later. Not now. I mean, just those few, I mean, really, is going to communicate much more respect than a big, long-winded tale. Yes.
A big lecture or a long podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Right, and I really like your idea of the do-over. And that's a short statement, too. Oh, we got to have a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
In our family, we do do-overs.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't communicate nicely, we're going to do it over.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think I said this before, but just adding again that sometimes when it feels appropriate to make those kind of funny is helpful.
Yes.
Teenagers, you know, accessing them with humor is a good place.
Now, another thing Rick McLeod would always say about when teens talk back is that there's only three reasons why teens argue with you.
Mm.
So stay out of the argument.
Okay.
He would say, skate away, skate away. Mm-hmm. And you know, he would say the three reasons are to break you down, okay, to distract you into something else, or to get you to say something or do something really stupid, okay? Now, that may not always be as, you know, true in every case, but it's important to realize that there's some things you argue with your teen about and there's some things you don't argue with your teen about. Mm-hmm. You don't argue about whether or not your teen cleaned the bathroom well enough or really scooped the poop in the backyard.
Right. The adult should be the decider of those.
You are sort of the employer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You get to decide whether it was done adequately. Mm-hmm. You don't argue about the time of your teenager's arrival because hopefully you were looking at a clock and it was obvious, right?
Yep.
But I really encourage parents to debate with their teenagers about philosophy and politics and religion and history and all kinds of things because the teen brain is like a galloping horse and it needs some exercise. And those are the things that will help stimulate it, you know, debate about math.
Mm-hmm. We could probably think of more interesting
things. Yes, we could. I'm sorry. You might debate about, well, I was going to say you could talk about sex and sexuality, and then your teenage year will not want to talk to you
Never
anymore.
Again, they'll run from the home, maybe. No, but I think just there's lots of things that we can engage them in conversation about. And I think asking them their opinion on things is one of the best way to initiate those conversations. Because if we're showing that we truly value them, that's going to encourage that relationship and that communication much more than just to say, hey, tell me something philosophical.
Yeah, right. I like
know
that.
What my child would say if I...
I like that. Yeah. Value their opinion. Ask them their opinion.
Yeah.
So what about the button pushing thing, Sarah? We want to cover that before we get to our money tips.
Yeah, I have buttons, I've discovered.
Yes.
And I think we all need to identify what our own buttons are and know those ahead of time and have an exit strategy for when our buttons get pushed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it would be disrespectful if my button got pushed and I just turned around and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to say, I'm not feeling good about this interaction, I'm going to take some time for myself and I will come find you in 20 minutes, I think that's okay. We're announcing our intention. We're announcing what has made us feel uncomfortable and why we're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to announce, I need a break. Mm-hmm. I'm not abandoning you.
Right.
I'll be back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you do not need to tolerate disrespectful behavior.
Yes.
I don't recommend that we ever stand there and engage in that. So our buttons will be pushed, identify them in advance, and have an exit strategy.
Yeah. So why is it that parents shouldn't sort of get really angry and sort of explode when their kids push their buttons?
Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. How much time do we have here?
I'm trying to get at this story that I remember. I used to work with a lot of challenging teenagers in counseling. And one of the things that they would say to me is that they'd say things like, I love it when my mom gets so mad that I can see the veins in her neck and her eyebrow. They start to sort of pulsate. And I love it when my dad's so mad that he spits when he yells at me, you know. And a lot of times parents don't get the fact that there's something that feels like the teenager gets lots of power when you react so strongly when you've gotten your button pushed. I'm not saying parents should just be a placid lake all the time and never have emotions.
Right. We're human.
But if you overreact, then what's happening is that in some ways you're giving your teenager power in response to the button pushing. And so you're giving positive reinforcement for the button pushing.
Right.
So that's not a good thing.
No.
No. And really when it comes down to, well, what can parents do for self-control? It's a lot about the things that you've been talking about. Step away, take some deep breaths, do a little mindfulness, walk your dog, right? And these are steps of self-control that parents need to practice ahead of time because it's the same kind of a deal as the developing teenage brain, and parents need to practice and rehearse their self-control in response to the teenager button pushing so that our brains can get better because they're still developing too.
I love all of this so much.
Okay.
It's such a good reminder. So I'm just going to emphasize it just a little bit more even.
Yeah.
So we're modeling this so our kids are seeing it. That's one point. They're watching us take these deep breaths and not overreact.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also preserving the relationship with our teen by not reacting in a destructive way.
Yes.
So cool.
You're not going to damage that relationship.
Right.
Which is very important.
Yeah.
We have this little thing in our brain called the insula. And it turns out, I don't talk about neuroscience a lot, but that meditation and empathic listening and a number of things we do rather than be impulsive is what kind of grows and strengthens this insula, which is a part of self-control and self-management. And so just like teenagers need some work on that area, so do adults. Time for some money advice?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, cash. What's worth $100? I would say my big advice is for parents of teenagers to get together with other parents of teenagers in parenting classes. Not because all the ideas that come there will be great, but because it's really important to consult with other parents who are going through similar situations. It's one method that we can use to help us be kind and gentle but firm, to support our teenagers' independence while at the same time continuing to guide them. I believe that parents need to consult with other parents and with really good parenting educators in order to achieve that. And so I'd say find a really good teen-oriented parenting class.
Excellent. I like that. And even if there maybe isn't a formal class that works out, I think getting to know the parents of your teen's friends and just having those conversations so that you kind of have a little bit of pipeline of communication with the parents so that you know what's going on and you can share in some of the experiences that you know your teens are having.
Right. Right. You should be talking to the other teenage parents.
Mm-hmm. I think that can be really helpful. So my tip is probably not going to surprise you, John.
Okay.
It's all about sleep.
Yeah. You are a fan of sleep. That's great.
I am. So guess how much sleep the average teen is getting?
Not enough. That's
right.
My guess.
7.5 to 8 hours a night.
Right.
And as we've said, they're growing. They're still growing so much. They just really, really, really need more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that just foundationally, in order to do your best at school, in order to do your best and learn how to manage big emotions that everybody's having and practice all these skills that we've been talking about, it's such a big deal. The foundation is that you have to have rest. It's going to be so much more challenging and harder if you are sleep deprived.
Yep. And I would add that even though I don't like to emphasize brain development a lot, I would say sleep is one of the ways that the brain continues to develop.
Yeah, it needs to regenerate overnight.
Yeah, and probably the two things I would add, I mean, I would say sleep and no chemicals or substances in the teen brain.
Mm-hmm.
I think those things would help with the teen brain development a lot.
We'll have a whole nother episode on that, though.
Yes, we will.
I'm going to say a little bit more about the sleep thing.
Okay.
One of the things that makes this so hard is that the circadian rhythm, so that's the time of night when we kind of get our most restoration from our sleep, does adjust a little bit in the teen years. And so they like to go to sleep more like 10 or 11 at night.
Right.
But the school systems around the country have not adjusted for that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we really just have to push that circadian rhythm on our end and get kids to bed. And so it's about 9 to 10 hours that teenagers need. I've seen that the most magic point is 9 hours and 25 minutes, which that seems a little precise, but but you know, somewhere in that zone. And I just think most teenagers also don't have, I think a lot of us adults don't have the self-control to get ourselves to bed on time. Teenagers don't either, and it's our job. It's just like we're giving them healthy food, we're providing them a place to live. We have to set up a culture of sleep in our home where they're getting the sleep they need.
Okay.
Okay.
I hear you loud and clear.
All right, good.
Hey, do you have any resources that you would recommend?
I do. I am a fan of Jane Nelson. She has a book called Positive Discipline for Teenagers. She and Lynn Lott have written this book, and mine is just really well read. It's dirty, and the pages are folded, and it's a really easy read and very applicable.
I can see it's right here in front of you, and it looks like it's well worn.
I love this book.
Good. So that's a great resource. Jane Nelson, Positive Discipline for Teenagers. And I'm going to say, I'm not going to give out a specific resource. Instead, I'm going to say, look in your community and find out who offers the best parenting classes in your community, because that will be a really good resource, and I recommend you take advantage of it.
Agreed. Very good. Teens are fun.
I think teenagers are fabulous, and I think their brains are fantastic. Mm-hmm. So we should end, and I should say in closing, thank you to the Charles Engelhard Foundation. They sponsor our Practically Perfect Parenting podcasts, and thank you also to NPEN, the National Parenting Education Network, also a sponsor, and we appreciate both of them.
Very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
The Practically Perfect Parenting podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Engelhard Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.